Merħba għal program Min Għajnejn Barranin fejn jiena Colin Fitz niltaqa' u niddiskuti pajjiżna ma' diversi persuni ta' nazzjonalitajiet differenti li għal xi raġuni u oħra għamlu lil Malta id-dar tagħhom. Min Għajnejn Barranin fuq 103.7 Campus jiena Colin Fitz, il-mistieden tal-lum hija fil-Malti, nistgħu nitkellmu bil-Malti imma sen kelmu bl-Ingliż biex inkomplu s-sensiela anka l-maġġoranza ta' s-sensiela jew kważi kollha kemmi hija bl-Ingliż għaliex nintaqgħu ma' ħafna nies Barranin. David, Dave Sammut, magħruf ukoll għaliex kien xandar fuq il-benzi tar-radju f'pajjiżna, magħruf bħala Planet Dave, huwa Malti tal-Kanada illi għatta l-ewwel snin ta' ħajtu fil-Kanada u imma ilu Malta wkoll, però għamel ħafna snin ukoll jgħix barra minn Malta, jaħdem barra. Ġifieri għandu ħafna esperjenza f'pajjiżi differenti u għalhekk stidintu għal dan il-programm għaliex jista' jtina l-esperjenza ta' persuna b'għajnejn barranin. Alla voli għandu għajnejn Maltin ukoll. Ma nafx hekk hux qed tagħmel sens għalik David.
Iva. Colin, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely spot on. So born in Canada, raised there, brought here. But then I left the island to for various reasons. And then I've come back. I've left again. Exactly. So yeah, so it's a bit of a mix. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a bit of a mix.
And you know Maltese, but we could say English is your first language. Well,
I know Maltese. Imod vocabulary uti ai limitat hafna fim. So okay. I won't be able to decorate sentences as I would in English, for example.
So Dave Sammut. And I'm sure some of our listeners will remember your voice from stations such as Bay, XFM.
XFM, yes. Then I did a very short stint at A3FM.
A3FM, but you were also on Island Sound originally, right?
That was where you started. That was the epicenter.
Yeah.
That was, I think, in my opinion, like it was where you cut your teeth, you learn your craft, right? That's what, and it was magical at that point,
way
right?
Back in the 90s.
Way back.
And you were one of the first generation of Canadian voices.
I would say maybe close second. I wouldn't say I was there from the get-go.
But in the 90s, there was first it was Terry Farrugia, and yeah, then Jason Zamit.
Yes.
Also known as Jay, and around the same time as Jay, kind of you appeared on the scene.
Yeah.
And there were a couple, Corinne Muscat.
Yeah, as well.
You know, all these North American voices, but specifically from Canada.
Yeah.
Who really had a big impact on the Maltese private radio station scene,
yeah,
I believe.
I guess so. Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It was a great opportunity to contribute, to be part of something here, since we didn't speak the language fluently, etc. And so it was an opportunity, especially when an English-speaking station was announced. I remember reading the paper, and I was there. I was like, oh, wow, look, there's an English-speaking radio station.
Yeah.
You know what?
In 92, right?
Yeah, I remember reading the article. I was like, I'm gonna look into this. This might be interesting for me. This might be exciting because when I was a kid growing up, I would try to mimic the radio DJs, the presenters in Toronto, and I would record myself. Yeah. And I got a kick out of it. And who know that I would never make a career out of it.
Then you went off air because you have your main job.
Yes.
And that took priority. And
that took priority. And I remember one time I was going to pivot in my career just because I enjoyed radio so much. And I was going to say, okay, I'm going to forego my career and just spend some time on radio doing some full-time radio gigs and just enjoying radio. I was young, you know, whatever.
Yeah. And also that generates some DJing, live DJing.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
In clubs and things.
Yeah, and I remember having discussions with my dad. And he's like, you know, maybe, you know, keep an eye on your main career and everything so you don't lose that investment that you made there already with school and
good
everything.
Good advice.
And it turned out, you know, so it was easier for me to get a job in my career than it is on radio, even though the first job I got abroad was with the BBC.
Oh, wow.
And everyone assumed that I landed a job on air with the BBC and like, wow, that guy was like a D-list celebrity here in Malta, but yet the BBC won him. No, I was not in anything to do with broadcasting there, although I would stand outside the broadcasting rooms that they had there, and I would speak really loudly using my best radio voice, but I was never noticed.
No, but you know, it's, but what is your career?
I'm a software consultant.
Which is taking you around the world.
It's literally taking me around North America, Europe, Asia as well.
Fantastic. So let's go back to the beginning.
Yes.
You were born in Canada.
I was born in Canada, yep.
To Maltese immigrants?
Well, no, my dad's Maltese and my mom born in Scotland, but went to Canada when she was like 10, 12.
Scottish ancestry, but...
Actually Ukrainian. Ukrainian-Polish.
Oh, yeah. Wow, what a mix.
The plot thickens.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. So,
no wonder you sound so exotic.
Yes. And then that's... so then, you know, my dad immigrated there because there was an opportunity. They were sending Maltese youth.
Was this in the
60s? Yeah. So he was part of that, you know, either Australia, United States, England, or Canada. He happened to go to Canada because he had family there. And then that's when they met each other. They met, mm-hmm. and then they got married, and they had us. Yeah, me and my
And you were
and
born
sister.
In the mid-70s?
I was born in the mid-70s, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the first few years of your life were spent in Canada, right?
Oh, yeah, till I was like 12.
How did you end up back in Malta?
Oh, it was for various reasons, and I think there was a trend of Maltese immigrants who had emigrated in the 60s. They decided to move back to Malta, and so
was around the mid 80s.
I was part of that wave.
Okay.
That
were you happy to come here, or would you have preferred to stay there at the time?
It's funny because when you ask someone at that age, "Hey, do you want to do this or that, and you know your life." Is whatever it is, you know, when you're at that age, it's not super exciting, right? You think of it, it's quite boring to a certain degree. You go to school, you have your family life and everything,
and your group of friends.
But you know, you're still very it was okay. Don't get me wrong. But when I thought, and maybe this is just my spirit of adventure coming out, I thought, hey. We're gonna move country. This is gonna be so exciting.
Oh.
I was like, hey, yeah, let's do this. And so. I was like, okay, sure. I mean, parents know best, et cetera, you know, that kind of stuff. I didn't have any strong opinions. And I thought, yeah, this would be exciting. And hey, if it doesn't work out in Malta, we should go to England.
Okay,
I just had the buzz. I was like, yeah, let's do this.
Were you coming from Toronto?
Yes, yes.
And there's a big Maltese community.
Yes,
there,
a huge Maltese community.
What do you remember of your childhood there, especially in relation to Malta?
Oh, I mean, the thing with growing up in Toronto to a Maltese parent. My dad has family there, and so what happens is that you get engulfed in this cultural. They try to preserve it as much as possible, right? So, you know, they would speak Maltese. I wouldn't understand a word, but there were things that you would do. Like there was a Maltese pastizzi place in the Dundas Junction village,
which I think still exists.
It still exists, and there are two now. There's one, but I think it still exists. And
a Maltese club.
A Maltese club as well. There's a Melita club over there.
Catholic churches.
Yeah, there's the church there. So I got baptized at the church, etc. You know, and they had like fagioli for Easter. So it was a light touch Maltese influence, right? Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like we didn't speak because my mom is Canadian. Mm-hmm. We didn't speak Maltese at home.
Mm.
But I did get the exposure. I was familiar with Maltese culture. Like just as us, I was familiar with Ukrainian culture as well, because you know, like you'd go to my mom's side of the family, and there would be like pierogi and vodka and all that stuff.
Wow.
And then you go to the other side, which is you know tea with muffins and on the other side of the fence. So it was a bit of a clash of cultures to a certain degree. But the nice thing about that is that you learn to appreciate both sides.
Mm-hmm.
So you have an appreciation for the Maltese traditions and the Maltese culture, the Maltese mannerisms, and you have an appreciation for the Ukrainian as well. And being a kid, you observe both, and it's all both quite natural. But only when you get older, you start to look at the similarities and also the differences between the two.
Had you ever been to Malta before you came to live here?
One holiday. We came for one holiday. I believe it was like a reconnaissance. Reconnaissance. Let's have a look around and everything. And I remember coming here and thinking, it was fine because you get all the attention, right? You come here, you're young, you get this huge family, and everyone's like, hey, let me take you this, let me do that. You know, people buying your stuff and everything, and you're really the center of and they teach you little Maltese words as well. So you can, so you're a little like a one trick pony. You know, Eidluek, Eidluek. Okay, and I'm just repeating. And one time I remember saying I would repeat even the Eidlu. So how oblivious was that, right?
But, and they take you to the beach.
And they take you to the beach and everything.
All the best
and,
of Malta.
Exactly, time, exactly. Yeah. But then when you move here, it's different.
Well, you have to go to school, you have to work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So when you packed your bags and you came back around 86, 87, yeah, whatever year it was, and how were things? I mean, you had to go to secondary school.
Oh, geez. Oh, man, that was...
Yeah.
Oof, man.
Adapting.
We're opening up boxes here, Colin.
Boys only school.
Discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it was
almost
hard.
All Maltese.
It was hard, right? It was hard because, you know, like it's easy to jump into a family setting where, you know, your aunts and your uncles and your cousins will make an effort to speak English to communicate. But once you're in a Maltese school, everyone has their friends. So think of it as new friends, but it's a different language.
Mm.
And so you're being parachuted into this environment where you're like, okay, survival mode. How can I survive in this space? And I've a couple of embarrassing moments. I'll tell you one story. But the thing is, you get in there, and it's like some teachers make the effort to speak a little bit in English so you understand what's happening there. Uh-huh. And others were just like, you know, this is a lesson's in Maltese for the sake of the other kids in the class. So I had to navigate education really aggressively, you know, to understand and to try to learn Maltese. And
you probably needed a lot of private lessons as well.
Well, yeah, I did. Did I go? That's another story. But
had a story to tell.
Oh yeah, so check this out. So I was in this I would pick up the bus from this bus stop, and there were kids there waiting, and you'd make friends with them. But in the beginning, I remember this was right in the first 2 weeks. So everyone's coming back from summer break, and their kids are waiting there, and you're trying to make friends. I'm a bit shy, you know, and everything. So you climb on the bus, and then you sit. I used to sit right behind the driver, sat right behind the driver, and I'm there and I'm thinking, okay, well, just get to school and everything. But for some reason, I wasn't feeling my greatest that morning. Mm-hmm. And I think I remember drinking a lot of milk the other day or whatever. For whatever reason, I wasn't feeling my greatest.
Oh, dear.
And it was a bus full of kids,
yeah.
13, 14, 15-year-old kids and everything. And I remember sitting there, I'm like, oh, man, I really have to pass gas. I really have to. And my stomach, I was like, this is so much pain. I mean, so what I said, okay, you know what? And what I'll do to love myself a little, I'll just let out a little bit so that I will feel a bit of relief. And so I did. And I was like, oh, okay, I feel much better. And I just sit down, get to school, and then I'll go to the bathroom, whatever. Well.
Because if somebody notices it's you,
well,
you'll be branded for the rest of your school years.
Well, check this out, Colin. So and at one point, and maybe a couple, maybe seconds later, the kids in the seat behind me, they go, woof, Mimbas out. And then as the bus ride continued towards the school, the smell went further back on the bus.
Of course. For the benefit of our international listeners, the word bus is in the vehicle is also the same Maltese word. In Maltese, that word is also the same word for gas.
Yeah, and I remember the I could imagine the trajectory of the fart going from the front of the bus to the back of the bus by the alarm of the children at each row as you went back and ultimately got to the back of the bus. Mimbas, who farted? And they wanted to know. They wanted to know, and they didn't. I think they're all good friends, so no one was fessing up and everything. But they didn't apply deduction to say, hey, maybe it's the new kid over there.
Okay.
So honestly, I dodged a bullet. Because otherwise, I would have had a different nickname than Planet Dave.
Of course, absolutely. But you got through your school years, okay? You managed to pick up enough Maltese.
Yeah. So what?
Did you ever feel like victimized or?
Here's the thing. I mean, I think there's when you get older, you learn much more about yourself, and you know, there's discipline, there's perseverance, etc., which is stuff I try to teach my daughter. But at that point, I found that I was good at certain subjects,
mm-hmm.
Maltese not being one of them. neither other languages, and I just focused on those things. And I would do quite well at school in those subjects. So I gained popularity in that space. And I
were you good at sport?
I was good at sport as well. So
that helps.
So
I was
average football player.
You mean soccer?
Some football, mm-hmm. soccer. Yeah, I enjoyed playing soccer there. And I remember when I joined, and I was okay. I was okay. I wasn't great, but I was okay. And I got the nickname of Il Canadese.
Il Canadese. Okay, that's sweet.
And then when I would score goals, people would like you. People would come. I mean,
absolutely.
What better activity to unite people who, you know.
Yeah.
Then sport, right? So
absolutely.
And then
that's an advantage.
And that's an advantage. So you become beloved to a certain degree if you're scoring goals and your class is doing well and you play for the school team, etc. Mm-hmm. However, the higher you climb, Colin, the harder you fall.
Oh dear.
Let me tell you a story. So we were playing. I remember it was in this football match. And it was a heated football match. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, as many people like you because you're Il Canadese and you score goals, there are an equal amount of people who don't like you because you're playing against their team or playing against their friends, etc. And, you know, in a heated game when it's all boys, think of a young prison camp where the different gangs, vying for victory. And there was a penalty.
Oh.
There was a penalty shot. And they asked me to take it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to take this one. And there's pressure. I remember there was kids behind the goal. And they were like yelling, chanting and everything. And there was the whole school was focused on me trying to score this stupid goal. And I was like, no pressure. And I think it's my naivety that I was like, yeah, whatever. I'll take it. I should have never taken this penalty. The pressure was insurmountable. So I go there and I put the ball there and I'm like, okay, I can take this. And I take a step back and I kick it. And for some reason, the goalie saves it.
Oh.
They saves it. But the referee blew the whistle. And he said, no, there was an encroachment or something like that. So I had to retake it.
Oh.
So Dave missed one penalty already.
Yeah.
Second one. I line it up again. I go and I kick it. I missed the net. I missed the net entirely. But again, encroachment.
Oh, the referee
Something else bad happened.
Okay. All the kids getting excited and everything.
This is bad.
I'm like, so you missed twice.
I don't want to take this penalty.
Okay.
So then I go back. And don't forget, Il Canadese. And I'm like, really, this is like, if I score this, I'm going to be a hero.
Yeah.
I take a step back. I look at the goalie in the face. And at this point, I'm embarrassed, but I'm equally angry. And I have people chanting at me, and I'm like, okay. So I take a step back, I run, and the only way to really score this is I have to use power, and I'm gonna kick it ponta,
mm-hmm.
not place. I'm just gonna kick it ponta
straight ahead,
as much power as possible. Just try to hit the goalie
front of your boots.
And I take a big run up, and I go running, and I kick it ponta. And I hit the post.
Oh, goodness.
Oh,
no.
Oh my God. And it was an erupted. The whole playground erupted.
Oh, goodness.
And going from a kid, and think about it.
Yeah.
Going from a kid who just landed to being the center of being a villain in this case.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal. It was a memory that stays with me.
Absolutely.
And even though it was embarrassing and I thought, oh, no. But it was great when you think about it. To be in that moment,
well,
and the main character. I mean, look at it back now. Who cares now, right? But
but did it lead to difficulties? Like
no, not at all, not at all. I mean,
they forgave you.
Oh, they forgave me. Then I used to play in that same. I used to play football with Slima as well. So
oh, you played.
So I played with Slima as well. Okay. So I was okay.
What school were we talking about? Just
Gzira.
The Gzira government school?
The government school, yeah.
Gzira, okay.
I was parachuted in there.
Okay. And where did you live when you came back to Malta?
Slima.
You lived in Slima.
So we moved my grandmother's place. She hosted mm-hmm. us for a good year. Mm-hmm. 6 months or a year, I think. 6 months, I think. And so it wasn't too far from the school. So that was the natural selection for me, yeah.
So, yeah. David, let's hear one of the songs that you've prepared for us. What would you like us to play?
You choose really. I mean, I know I think I prepared three or four here. From my childhood, there's Gowan.
Okay.
It's called...
Is Gowan a band or a song?
Gowan is the old Styx mm-hmm. Styx lead singer from
Styx. The group Styx.
Yeah,
okay.
he went on and Mr. Roboto.
Yeah, okay.
He went on to do his solo project, and he's calling himself Gowan.
Indeed.
And he had two songs there, A Criminal Mind and
You're a
Strange Animal.
So what year was this song from?
Oh, this is from early 80s.
Okay.
From early 80s. And I remember hearing this song...
On the radio
and in shops when we would go shopping and whatnot. And there was a huge buzz around the school because, you know, people would be...
Was he Canadian?
Yeah. Okay. Fans. Big fans of this. So this, when I hear the song, it takes me right back to my childhood. And I'm just like, bam, I know exactly where I was when I heard the song.
Okay, early 80s Canada, Toronto.
It's a fantastic.
You're a Strange Animal by Gowan.
Stick a line in your system.
interesting stuff there. You're a strange animal. Gowan, the lead singer of Styx, the old band Styx, which had a number of hits in the late 70s and early 80s, one of those stadium bands, they call them, right?
Sort of they were big,
Yeah, and lots of their number ones. Their biggest hit was Babe, eventually.
Babe and Mr. Roboto, right?
And Mr. Roboto, although that one, Mr. Roboto was a number one hit for them in North America.
All right.
It wasn't very popular here.
Oh, okay. Oh,
no. Very strange song. It was like a mix of rock and electronic music that was so prevalent in the very first years of the 80s.
Absolutely.
Interesting. Okay, so... you leave school. Did you attend university here? How did you?
I went to the Technical Institute here. Mm-hmm. So I did microcomputer technology here.
Oh, it used to be before MCOM. It wasn't Paola, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. And so I did that, and then I just started working after that. While I was at school, I had this moment where I was like, you know, you settle into life and you're at school and you're like, okay, this is life, blah, blah, blah. At one point, I remember looking at myself and thinking, hey, you know what? I could probably use these skills abroad. I could probably go abroad and work and see a bit of the world and take this as my career. And so I remember when I was like 16, 17, I thought, yeah. That's what I'm going to do.
Had you managed to get yourself a good group of friends here, though? Maybe some expats, people.
Oh yeah,
you know, Maltese Canadians.
Yeah.
Or did you have Maltese friends? What was your clique?
I forgot to mention that when I first landed in the first school in Xira, there was an American and another Canadian,
mm-hmm.
and I remember.
I gravitated towards them,
and we just hung out. And there was a British guy as well.
What did you miss most about Canada, though, while you were here growing up?
Oof.
I mean, probably television
was culture,
different, music.
Pop culture, you know, things that are going on, the trends. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, it's a fair observation that, you know, you were spoiled for choice, and I know it sounds shallow, but like to buy stuff, everything, like, and so you go from buying Nikes and Adidas and all that stuff to coming here, you have to settle for the two prevailing brands, Sanga and Soldini. I don't know if they're still around, but
I see what you mean.
But you see, there was a degree of adjustment there, but you adjust, right? Then you find the Sangha that you really like. You find the Soldini that really appeals to you. But then when you started to get these...
Eventually in the 90s, things started to open up. Bigger market.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to jump completely now to one of your philosophies. Because you've mentioned this before when I've interviewed you over the years, even here at campus, on other programs, because you're an interesting guy.
Oh, thank you.
You said the word adjust.
Yes.
And you've applied this when I asked you, like, which is the best country in the world to live? Yeah. Because you've also lived in Holland for a few years.
Lived in Holland, Sweden, Germany.
UK.
France.
Mm-hmm.
UK.
When you worked at the BBC and met Jeremy Clarkson.
I met Jeremy Clarkson as well. Yeah, lovely guy, lovely guy.
Took a picture with him.
Yeah.
No, but seriously, I mean, and I remember asking you a few years ago when I interviewed you here, after you had come back, and you've settled down pretty much here. You've been here a few years.
Yeah, three years now.
With your lovely wife, Alexia, and your daughter.
Carla.
Carla. I remember asking you, which is the best place to live? I mean, did you like living back here in Malta or not?
Yeah.
And your answer was something like, you just adapt wherever you are and you kind of make the best life you can wherever it is you are according to the life, the type of life that exists there.
Sure.
That's the sort of philosophy you have, which is a very interesting and a very positive way of looking at life.
The thing is, I guess, is if you have the need for something, whatever that is, even if you don't know what that need particularly is, but it's just a feeling, for example, you have a need for something, and you're not getting that in your current environment, you can either accept the fact that you'll have an absence of that, or you could do something. There are things that you can change, you know. There's opportunities, right? So you can't just say, "Oh, I want to do this, so I'm going to go do that." So you have to look at what are you prioritizing in your life at this point in time, and that's kind of what I've done. So at one point, I prioritized my career. Another point, I prioritized having community. At one point, I prioritized safety.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of these things play into what it is your what is your main priority at this point in time, and that comes with a trade-off,
and that dictates where you've lived,
and exactly that, but that comes with a trade-off, and it comes with a degree of courage, mm-hmm. and sometimes the trade-offs are what you focus on, the things that you've given up for what you want, mm-hmm. and this can lead to, you know, saying, oh man, why did I do this? What, like, I had just moved to Paris, and I thought, oh man, Paris is gonna be great, I'm gonna get out of this. I was in a dead end job, and I was like, oh, I gotta get out, it's gonna be great. And everything, I had this opportunity. It's like, hey, they're gonna pay for my place. I'm gonna have a good job. And I was like, just go. And then I remember when I got there and I landed the first night, I got this sense of panic. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, okay, the job is in French. I don't speak French. Oh. Okay, there's gonna be some people there, obviously. I'm on my own in a big city. You know, it's like I don't speak the language. If I need to go to a doctor or something like that, it's going to be like, okay, I need someone to translate my medical letters or my letters from the government, etc. Mm-hmm. And so the thing that drove me to go there was my career, a bit of adventure, being young, not having any commitment. Mm-hmm. But then on the flip side of that is that, well, this is the price you're going to pay for that. So you're either going to hurry back home and say, no, I was too scared of this. Or you're going to say, look, I'm going to accept these things that are going to be tough, but I'm going to make the most out of it because there was a reason why I needed to come here. Mm-hmm. And then when you apply that level of perseverance, and once again, this is just the way I look at life, dude.
Yes, absolutely.
When you apply this
but
level,
it's the reason I'm interviewing you, yeah. Because I get all these different points of view from people who have traveled a lot or have come from other parts of the world, and that's the whole point of the program.
Okay, but when you have this, when you apply this level of perseverance, you're like, okay, I'm gonna milk this. I'm gonna stay on this path to see what happens. I'm going to see what happens. What am I going to learn about myself? What am I going to, you know, it's not, you know, it, what, there's a reason why this is happening, not to sound too philosophical, but I'm here for a reason. Let's see how long this lasts. And then what happens is that you persevere, you go through it, and what happens is that, Colin, you find comfort in the discomfort. Mm-hmm. So for example, at times on the weekend, for example, you'd have so much time on your hands. I'd go for long runs, then I'd go for a long walk.
Where was this?
In Paris. I'm giving you Paris as an example. And then you learn so much about yourself, and you make the best out of any situation, because you could easily just stay at home and feel sorry for yourself, mm-hmm. or you could get up and say, look, you know what? Okay, these are the things that are against me right now. What can I do within my power to actually enjoy this or to learn something about myself, mm-hmm. or to help others, essentially? And so if you take Paris as an example, that was my experience, yeah. there.
Now, for example, you decided after all these different places that you've lived in, probably made more money abroad.
You spend a lot of money abroad too, eh?
So there's ups
you
and downs.
Spend
exactly.
So much, yeah.
But you decided to come back here. What were the main reasons that you and your wife,
okay.
decided Malta's the next place for us for the foreseeable future?
Right. So the idea was we were in London for like 10 years, and there were changes to taxation that impacted me as an independent contractor, mm-hmm. in the UK. So that was already like, oh, okay, these guys want to tax you X percent more, for example. So it was, you know, that was
okay.
That was one thing, and then COVID
yeah.
came along, and then what we found was that with a very young family, we found that. Without having any community around us, because people are very transient in London. You can go places, you will make friends, mm-hmm. and it'll be lovely. But then these people, you know, they're either leaving or they're coming or they're going. London's very expensive. So it's very transient place. At least that's my experience in that space. And what we found was that during COVID, we were very vulnerable because both my wife and I had caught COVID. Mm. And we had a young daughter at mm-hmm. the time. And we're like, okay, if it gets so bad that
two or three.
Yeah,
right?
Two or three. Exactly. If we were like hospitalized, mm-hmm. or for some reason.
Oh.
I had no one to leave my kid with.
Ah.
No one. And so the friends we had were like paranoid about COVID. So if I'm saying, hey, can you take my kid? She's from a COVID household. Can you? So imagine that vulnerability that you feel. You're like, and you can't get on a plane unless you're vaccinated or they're limited.
Yes.
So it's like, what do you do? Like a lot of people there would go to, and to be honest with you, if you don't have family there, I'm sure there were other people in my same similar situation.
You felt very vulnerable.
And so I thought to myself, well, what I'm missing here is peace of mind, Mm-hmm. And I'm missing a sense of community. Mm-hmm. But I did have a purpose there because I was doing my career, which is fine. But those are the three things that I'd like to measure, like the quality of the things that you have in your life. And so we decided to say, I think it was such a visceral reaction mm-hmm. to that. Mm. That it was just like, you know what?
Even now, after it passed, you even still after, felt
it's like,
the need.
No, why? No, it's like, well, why? Because then what happened was that you start to think, okay, how can I fix this? And then you look at your options. It's like, you know what? Maybe I'll move out of London because we had spent a lot of time in London. So let's move out of London. It's really expensive to live in London to actually get on the property ladder to do all that stuff, right? And so then we said, look, it's either go to the middle of nowhere in England where we know no one or everything to start up, or we could go back to Malta where we have community. Mm-hmm. We have family, friends. Exactly. We have familiarity, et cetera.
And am I right in saying that even if after having spent 10 years in London, coming back to Malta, you fit in very quickly.
Still the same, dude. And so we just decided that was the best thing for us to do. And then we thought, okay, well, then if that's what's important... Because here's the thing, these things you take for granted, I suspect. And only when the things that you take for granted are threatened, does it focus the mind to say, actually, no, I could have lost this particular thing, so I'm going to cherish it. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you take so many things for granted, right? So you don't invest in them, you don't cherish them, you don't nurture them. But we wanted to take a conscious decision to say, look, we have our support network. We have a community, a peace of mind.
Mm-hmm. You could still practice your, both you and your wife can still make a good living from your
I mean, careers. I still work in continental Europe, so I'm still...
You still travel a lot.
Yeah. Okay. But that's the trade, right? Mm. That's the trade, right? So you're like, oh, this traveling, you know, and everything. But yeah, you say, okay.
But you're based here.
I'm based here.
But are there any things in Malta... that you wake up in the morning, oh, there's a power cut, or there's traffic, or there's this, or there's that, mm-hmm. or there's construction. Are there any things that annoy you that every now and then you find yourself doing the whole weighing thing? Mm. Okay, I've got the community, I've got the peace of mind here in Malta, but this is really annoying me, it might force me to leave again.
Things are going to annoy you wherever you live, things are going to annoy you. You go to Canada, it's the cold. Mm-hmm. I can't go out for so many months a year. It's mm-hmm. so cold. Mm-hmm. You go to England, it's maybe the weather again, when it rains again, or things are just so expensive. You can't, if you don't go to a park and you want to experience something, you want to do something, it's going to cost you an arm and a leg. It's expensive. Safety aspects as well. You know, these things all play. And it's complex, right? Mm-hmm. It's complex. And sometimes what you do is you take a subset of those variables and you reason about those variables when you're not looking at the whole complete picture. So when things do irritate you here, so things that, you know, like irritates anyone else here. Mm-hmm. So here's the thing, this is the way I'm looking at it. People who living in Malta is an option for mm-hmm. versus people who is not an option. So some people don't have an option
to live here.
And some people don't have an option but to live here. And some people who, this is an option. This is for them. They've chosen to be here. They could be elsewhere.
Okay.
And I believe that those two frames of mind offer different tolerance levels.
Ah.
So when you come here, when you've left, let's say, for example, London or any other city, you come here, you're like, oh, you know, I had this over there. And people who live here, who are cemented here, who have built their life here, they know that they can't change certain things. And so there's different tolerance levels to these things. They're not as big of a deal.
Okay.
Because otherwise you go crazy always, you know, like thinking, oh, this bothers me. Mm-hmm. It's incessant. And then you drive yourself crazy.
Yeah.
And I believe it's a bit of an art to say, look, for myself, where are your tolerance levels? And if you're aware of your tolerance levels and the things that, you know, that's fine. I'm going to tolerate this, for example. That I believe is what tries to keep what keeps me in check, if you will. Uh-huh. Like, so when I wanted to leave the UK, it was very visceral. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was like, that crossed the line. COVID crossed the line for me. I don't want to live being vulnerable like that. No. Not happening.
It was happening. A big wake-up call for you.
Not happening there.
But this could happen again.
But for here, I mean, there's... Yeah, sure. Take your dog. There's garbage outside. There's dog poop there. There's it. But then... On the flip side of that, you know, I went to the ironmongery around the corner from me. I went there early. I needed to buy something. He was closed. He was fixing something. He's like, "Hey, Hanif Dahlik, let me get you something."
It's like, the community.
Nice. It's okay. Nice.
Okay, very good.
It's all nice.
Right, I think you've answered the question very clearly. It's all about tolerance levels and also how much choice you have of moving or not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And courage. Colin, courage. Mm. Courage. I believe courage is key. Courage is key.
In what way?
Courage is key because anyone can do a lot of things in life, mm-hmm. but it takes courage. It takes sacrifice to pursue something.
Okay, like or even to change your attitude.
Or even to change your attitude. Like, for example, I had just landed here, maybe like 2 or 3 years ago. I was at this place, and I met this old friend. He was with someone else. I didn't know the guy. And he's like, "What'd you come back here for? You were living in London." Mm-hmm. And I'm like, have you lived abroad? Do you know the context? Do you know what it means? And how can you be so presumptuous to say that, you know, you know what's best in that regard? Whereas, you know, you need to appreciate more what you have here.
I mean, London is, there's concerts, there's museums.
Oh, sure.
Beautiful
buildings. Oasis just got back together.
Yeah, it's amazing. But you need to have the money to go to these concerts and to these places.
And you know...
Yeah, and you need to pay for the council tax.
And you know what sucks?
And you need to pay for the fuel and the heating. Yeah. And
and you know what sucks, Colin? Mm-hmm. Not being able, wanting to do those things and not being able to do anything.
Yeah. It's even worse than maybe putting up with some of the irritations here. I'm not putting down the people who complain, because there are things to complain, just like in every country here. And sometimes we wish that there is more enforcement of certain things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you mentioned the rubbish or this, well, there, that, the, whatever. Mm. But it's all about your attitude to it as well.
Here's some advice we give whoever I'm mentoring in my job, and they're working in a toxic environment, right? And they're like, "Oh, I can't work in this environment. It's blah, blah, blah." And then sometimes they become part of that toxicity in the environment. And I tell it, look, the only thing that you can control is your reaction to these toxic events that are happening around you. If you can start by controlling that, that's all you can do within your power. And this is, when you look at it, how can I change? How can I go out there and change what's happening in my town? Do I go up to the mayor and start yelling at him? You know, you just need to understand that, you know, there are certain... You can impact change, and maybe you come up with an initiative, you can, the power of one and all that great stuff and all that stuff. But if something's happening, you can change the way you react to it, or you can try to do something about it. And that would be like the next level up.
Yeah.
By just letting it beat you down. I mean, come on. I mean,
you're not going to achieve anything. Yeah. Yes. And you're not going to.
And you're damaging yourself. It's not great.
Dave Samut. Some music. The song we played earlier on was by Gowen, "You're a Strange Animal." You also came up in your preparation.
Whatever you want. I would love to play some Tragically Hip.
Tragically Hip.
I would love to play Tragically Hip, if you can find it.
And the name of the track?
Bob Cajun.
Bob Cajun, is that?
It's a place in Canada, yes.
Okay, by the Tragically Hip,
yes.
Canadian band.
I love the Tragically Hip.
Tom Sawyer, Canadian band Rush,
yes.
Of course, legends. And Our Lady Peace, are they also Canadian?
The Tragically Hip and Our Lady Peace, mm-hmm. when I was in my 20s, I moved back to Canada for a couple of years, and I lived there. I moved downtown, so I felt like I was a foreigner and a migrant in my own country.
Okay.
Because without having my immediate family there, I had moved back there.
Yes.
And I was seeing things differently as an adult, not as a child.
Of course.
And so I had a job, and I rented an apartment downtown. So I was living the life, so to speak, kind of thing.
What does downtown mean? It means like where everything is happening?
Yeah, where all the business, like where all the skyscrapers are, where all the nightclubs are, where all the shops are.
Rather than the suburbs.
Rather than the suburbs, exactly. And I remember on the radio at that time, very popular. Those two bands were like in their heyday, and so you would hear their music on the radio all the time. And so I have fond memories of just, you know, like adjusting to life, living on my own, and kind of with that music. That was the soundtrack, essentially.
Absolutely represents you. Thank you.
left your house this morning at a quarter after nine. Could have been the Willie Nelson, could have been. Left your house this morning, it was a little after nine. It was in Bob Cajun. I saw the constellations reveal themselves one star at a time. Working on my mind, I thought I may be quitting, thought of leaving it behind. Went back to bed this morning, and as I'm pulling down the blind, yeah, the sky was dark.
Another song that represents Dave Samudz, also known as Planet Dave, former radio broadcaster here in Malta, being interviewed during Minayne Baranin, Malta through International Eyes, here on Campus 103.7. I also ask those people who take part in the program, the guests, to come up with some television programs, movies that represent their childhood, represent the place where they consider home or their original home. And you've made a list here of programs for me. For example, The Littlest Hobo.
Amazing.
This is a Canadian production that started in 79 and went on to 1985. I have a feeling that some episodes of The Littlest Hobo were shown on Maltese television when I was a child as well.
Look at that.
In the early 80s. But tell us about this program and why you chose it as representative of
Well, the Littlest Hobo was one of those wholesome TV shows that we were as kids there we would watch, right?
Like Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah, something like that. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's a great the premise is great. There's this homeless guy with his dog, and they go around and they do good. And they meet people with problems. So think of it's like the A-Team, But
okay, or the Incredible Hulk, like going from place to place, but in Canada.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay, all right, and it really shows off Canada, and
yeah, of course.
If it's the same program I remember from my childhood, all I can remember is like lots of logs and trees and forests. It was always in some sort of village in the middle of Canadian Rockies or whatever.
In the wilderness, rather than
in the city.
No, I would say it's more that's the case in these little towns and villages and stuff.
Yeah, lumberjacks.
Yeah, this is from what I remember. Once again, this is like eons ago. Okay.
Another program from your childhood. We definitely had this here, Fraggle Rock.
Oh, amazing!
Made by the same people as the Muppet Show.
This was co-produced by Canadians, so that's why I've added it to the list there. They don't have full credit on that, but I remember growing up, I was a huge fan growing up, the Muppets, and so Fraggle Rock was one. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Fraggle Rock. We definitely had this on TVM in the mid '80s, so that's something we had in common, and that was like partly produced by Canadians.
Yes, yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Trailer Park Boys.
Trailer Park Boys is more of a recent TV show that it doesn't represent where I'm from, whatever. It's a comedy.
Crude humor.
Very, very crude.
Offbeat characters.
Very crude, exactly. And it's funny. I guess
it's a cultural phenomenon.
Exactly. And the thing is that I guess when I was living there, it was on. People would reference it when talking about stuff. So that's why I decided to add it there as part of like if you want to get a bit of a Canadiana or a part of a segment of it, then watch the Trailer Park Boys. It's hilarious.
Okay. Meals, foods. Tell us Canadian food.
Oh, geez. Canadian food. Meat and potatoes.
Okay.
Hot dogs.
I mean, my Canadian friends are always talking about mac and cheese.
Mac and cheese. I was never a big fan of mac and cheese, to be honest. There's poutine. You can have poutine, which is it's not on the list there, but what it is, it's French fries with gravy and cheese, essentially.
Okay.
So it was I've taken part. I've eaten that a couple times. I mean, like food wise, like there's these. I'll get to the ones I listed there, but there's this restaurant, this franchise called Tim Hortons.
Tim Hortons,
and they have amazing donuts, and they have the donut when they make the hole in the middle.
Uh-huh.
Those things are called Timbits, and they flavor those as well. Okay. So you can buy a box of Timbits.
Yeah.
We went to Canada last year. My daughter absolutely loves Tim Hortons and the Timbits, and they have great coffee there too. But growing up, I remember, my dad, Maltese, living in Canada, I remember he would make us, for lunchtime, we would walk home and we would spend lunchtime at home and then walk back to school.
Mm-hmm.
And he would make us scrambled eggs on toast with ketchup.
Oh, nice.
And I remember being, every lunchtime, we would go back home and we would watch the Flintstones. They would always be on. We'd watch that. We'd spend some time with Dad because he worked different shifts.
Mm-hmm.
So we wouldn't see him. For example, after school, for example,
processed cheese. You wrote here.
Oh yeah,
grilled cheese sandwiches.
So grilled cheese sandwiches were amazing. So the simple, the processed cheese there. The people, it tastes like cheese. I don't know what exactly is in it, but they come in these little plastic,
envelopes,
exactly. So you put that on there, a grilled cheese with that. And then you add a pickle and some pepper all on the side. It's amazing.
What about Maltese food? Do you have a favorite Maltese type of food?
Oh yeah, I mean, back in the day when I could eat gluten and dairy, anything from like Roquefort. That was my favorite. My grandmother used to make really good, a mean Roquefort.
When you were in Malta.
Yeah, Malta. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Roquefort is nice as well. Mm. Never a big fan of eating rabbit, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
And to conclude our, I asked you like maybe a bit of literature or book or poem that represents you or represents where you come from.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, so this was actually I had a really really good English teacher when I came when I first landed in Malta.
Mm-hmm.
And he introduced
at Gzira Secondary in the 80s.
Yeah, he introduced literature, us to literature. I didn't have an appreciation before that. Maybe it was just at the right time and whatever. But anyway, he introduced us, and I remember from all the boring poems that we would go over, one particularly stood out and stuck with me. I think it's because of his explanation of it, essentially. Mm-hmm. His explanation, it stuck with me. And I try to this day, I still hold it, the gist of it, quite close. And it's by Rudyard Kipling, written in 1895. And the poem, I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with it, it's called If.
Mm-hmm.
And it essentially says, don't panic.
Would you like to read it to
us? Oh, sure. I can read the first part if you want.
Sure.
All right, so here we go. You're going to play some really cool music under this, I suspect, right?
Could do.
If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too. If you can wait and not be tired by waiting or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good nor talk too wise. And that's just the first part of the poem, but...
I can understand how it can have an impact on somebody.
Especially a young kid that just missed three penalties in a row.
Okay, David, we're going to conclude this edition of Binanin Barani in Malta through International Eyes. It's been a great pleasure talking to you. But my final question to you would be, having spent the first 12 years of your life in Canada, Toronto...
Mm-hmm.
And then on and off living in Malta, including the last 3 years, 10 years in London, spent a few years in Holland, some years in Sweden, and a number of other countries because of your work. Where would you call home?
That's a good question. That's a good question. Do you want geographical locations or home is...
To you, in your heart, like... If somebody asked you, where are you from, David? Who are you?
Oh, I mean...
What are you?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I guess I would always firstly say I'm Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
I would always say I'm Canadian. Just because there's no when I'm in Canada, there's no translation needed. There's no interpretation needed. Mm-hmm. I get it. I get the culture. I'm there. I'm just... It's cool.
You could go back today and fit right in.
It's fine. It's mm-hmm. fine. When I'm living in other countries, no matter what the country is, there's always a degree of interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, this is what this is. And so there's, you know, when you look at all the activities that happen within a country and you're living within this country,
mm-hmm.
you will have alignment with a percentage of those activities.
Yeah.
So if you're a foreigner living in Sweden, you're going to be aligned with some of the things that Sweden has to offer. Me living in Malta, yeah, there's like 80%,
mm-hmm.
you know, or 70%. There's that. But living in Canada, there's like 90% or above 90%. Like, so for example, you know, there's some things that are so natural to you, and some things that are just like, it's not for me, for example.
So you still feel slightly like an alien here in Malta?
Marginally. Because, I mean, not all things appeal to me.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate them. I respect them and everything, but not everything appeals to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. Not everything's for you, right?
Dave Samud, it's been a great pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us on Campus 103.7. We'll be right back.